Standard Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, as we face a cold Wisconsin winter during a pandemic, our guest shares some great ways to stay safe and get outdoors and offers some inspiration, too. First, there have been calls for President-elect Joe Biden to cancel student loan debts, partially or completely. Biden proposed $10,000 of federal loan forgiveness while on the campaign trail and supported legislation in the U.S. House to do that. And Democratic Senators Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren are pushing a plan that would wipe out as much as $50,000 of student debt per student. Schumer said Biden could use his executive power to do that. And last week, a group of nearly 250 nonprofit and community organizations urged Biden to take action on student loans on his first day in office. Supporters say wiping out that debt would help stimulate the economy. Critics question that and say it would unfairly and disproportionately benefit people with higher incomes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see the incoming Biden administration and or Congress work to forgive some student loan debt or not? If you're still paying for college yourself, what would having that bill waived or cut down mean to you? If you've paid off your loans, how does this idea sit with you? And what questions do you have about how this would all work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Danielle Douglas-Gabriel covers the economics of education for The Washington Post. Danielle, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We've heard ideas of student loan forgiveness, partial or total, floating around for a while now. Does it seem to be taking on, I guess, a new life, new urgency with the incoming Biden administration?
It does, because the president-elect has reiterated a few times that student loan forgiveness would be a part of his economic recovery plan. Now, he hasn't been specific as to whether he'd take executive action or try to work with Congress to broker a deal. But this is the first time we have seen that this proposal reach this level.
Can you talk about some of the different ideas floating around there? I kind of summarized a couple of them from President-elect Biden, from Democratic senators. What's the range of ideas people are talking about out there?
So we have the $10,000 idea, which has actually came in two forms on the Biden before the Biden campaign. There was $10,000 in emergency relief that would be completely tied to the coronavirus relief and recovery. Then there would be a different separate tranche of $10,000 relief for borrowers who earn under $125,000, attended a public college or university, or I believe a HBCU or minority serving institution. That's a separate thing, and that would definitely need to go through Congress, though the relief portion of Biden's plan could potentially be done through executive action, similar to what the Department of Education used, that the authority they used in order to suspend interest on student loans since the beginning of the crisis. The other plan, which Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren have been promoting, would be $50,000 worth of student loan forgiveness, which would be a pretty significant lift. It would be about $1 trillion worth of forgiveness under that plan, but it would certainly take care of a large portion of the 44 million people who owe student debt.
What's been the argument from supporters of these ideas when it comes to stimulating the economy?
So the idea of having that forgiveness, I guess folks are figuring that you could redirect the money that people would be paying per month on their student loans to participating in the economy, whether that means saving more money towards buying a house or purchasing a car or being able to just buy various items that you probably would put off if you are having to pay $200 a month on your student loans. I think probably the argument that has gained the most traction is the idea that about a third of the folks who owe on their loans owe less than $10,000. And the largest percent of people who are in default on their loans are people who have less than $10,000 and have some among the lowest incomes. So $10,000 of forgiveness would really help the folks who are most at risk of falling further down the financial trouble.
That's been one of the arguments against this, Danielle, that, okay, if you have a plan that targets people who went to college, you are, in effect, redistributing money to wealthier people, people who thought they could afford college in the first place. But it sounds like you're saying there's at least a section of people who would be affected by this who are not in those higher income categories.
Definitely. I mean, there are a lot of people who have college debt but did not complete their degree. They had to drop out. Oftentimes, it's because they didn't have the money to complete and they started to worry about the debt that they were taking on and they made that decision. That's a fairly significant portion. There are also people who are senior citizens. I've spoken to quite a few lately who went back to get degrees in order to sharpen their skills, ended up having to take out more debt than they had intended on, and do not see a pathway to paying that money off before they die.
Talking to Danielle Douglas-Gabriel from The Washington Post, looking at some calls for the incoming Biden administration to forgive some student loan debt. The amounts vary depending on who you're talking to. You can join in with your thoughts on this idea at 800-642-1234. Now, with the idea of this going through Congress, Danielle, one big question mark is who's going to control the Senate after Georgia elections? Have Republicans, especially in the Senate, been open to any of these ideas so far?
Not so far. Debt forgiveness is not high on their list. Some other ideas have come up, potentially increasing income-driven repayment plans that allow you to pay a percentage of your income towards your student loans. And that has received a positive attention within the Republican Party. So has potential consolidations of some of the repayment plans, but outright student debt forgiveness is not a popular idea.
Let's bring on a caller now. Nancy is with us in Appleton. Nancy, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention when I was in eighth grade, my dad broke apart or showed me this piggy bank, and there were five children in my family, and he said, a fifth of this is yours. And it was a small piggy bank. I still have it to this day. And he said, this is your start to your student, you know, to your college fund, but you're going to have to somehow get some money. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to get good grades to try to get some scholarships to go. And that was what we did. And I put myself through, my husband did as well. We did have some loans. I realized today that college is, I believe it's much more expensive, relatively speaking, than it was for me. And even than it was for my children, who are 40 and 42, who had some student, neither one of them had student loan, but both their spouses did. So I'm open to student loan somewhat being forgiven. But my question has always been, have kids been guided as much to start planning early for this and participating in a way to help pay for their education? Have they been doing some part-time work in the summers or when they're not maybe in sports, or has the family?
Gotcha, Nancy. That's a common thing I think people bring up, Danielle. If we're forgiving loan debt now, are we, I guess, excusing not planning enough in advance, given, as Nancy says, college costs a lot more than it did 20, 40, 50 years ago?
Certainly. And I think that the caller makes a good point about what kind of skin in the game will students have. But I would like to note that there are a number of students who are working part time while they're attending college, and some cases full time while they're attending college. So it's not that they are not participating in this. And there are families that have saved. But honestly, the cost of college is more than many Americans, middle income Americans, can really plan for. And I think the kind of pressure point is the cost of public education has increased so much. And that was supposed to be the affordable option for a lot of American families. And it's becoming less so as states decide to provide less and less appropriations to a lot of their flagship regionals and community colleges.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about recent calls on President-elect Biden to cancel large portions of federal student loan debt. Danielle Douglas-Gabriel is our guest. She covers the economics of education at The Washington Post. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. Do you support wiping out at least some student loan debt or not? Are you still paying off your loans? How does that affect your ability to spend elsewhere? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation on whether President-elect Biden could and or should wipe out some federal student loan debt. He's proposed forgiving up to $10,000 per person. Some Democratic senators say, hey, how about $50,000? You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Is this an idea worth considering? How would it affect you, if at all? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Danielle Douglas-Gabriel stays with us. She covers the economics of education for The Washington Post. Let's go back to your calls now. Let's go to Michael with us in Madison. Michael, hi.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call. You asked how it would affect me. I'm a parent of a student with a good deal of student debt, and it would affect me by allowing me to sleep at night. Mm. Knowing that these young people, and I've talked to many of them, and many of them are in the same boat, they go to school, they take out these student loans, and they spiral out of control. First problem with these student loans is the interest rates that they're getting on them. If you bought, your education is long-term, and that's similar to buying a home. Yet the interest rates that are given on these loans are not anywhere close to what they could be for a similar type of expenditure. Perhaps framing this as straight up loan forgiveness might be a mistake because it sounds like a handout. People don't like that. However, I would think framing it as a way for young people to rejoin the consumer markets and to make these movements forward that they need to was good for everybody. I turn on the TV, I see people who may get into business debt with the IRS because they didn't pay their employee taxes or something like that. They have ways of negotiating and getting out of this debt, not getting out of it, but negotiating some sort of fair resolution to it. Same with consumer spending with a credit card or a Kohl's card, something like that.
Michael, thanks a lot for calling in. Michael pointing toward, among other things, a couple of front-end things, the interest rates and the inability in many cases to refinance or renegotiate those interest rates over time. Are people talking about that, Danielle?
Definitely. I mean, the interest rates on federal student loans are pretty low right now for undergraduates. However, graduate loans as well as Parent Plus loans are pretty high, higher than what you would probably pay on a mortgage right now. And there's origination fees attached to that. There have been policy discussions about potentially getting rid of the origination fees in order to save families some money. So that is something that we could possibly see as a policy prescription coming into the new year in Congress. And there is also discussion about allowing students to refinance their federal student loans. Now, you can refinance your federal student loans into a private loan for a lower interest rate, but in doing so, you lose a lot of the consumer benefits that federal student loans provide.
Thanks for that call. We'll go to Jenny now in La Crosse. Jenny, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I do have a lot to say and probably not a lot of time, but I'm an educator for the last 25 years and currently just received my master's degree, and I do have quite a bit of debt along with that. And my son's going to be heading off to college. And so, you know, is this topic worth talking about? Definitely. It would directly impact me to have some of my loans forgiven. I do work a second job along with teaching, so you know, just having some of my loans forgiven and knowing that I can definitely put that back into the economy is super important to me. And I look ahead. My kids work, both of them part-time. They're applying for scholarships. But we all know that their college, public school, you know, tuition is going to be triple, if not quadruple, what I paid 25 years ago. So I think it's an amazing idea, and I did like what the last caller said about, you know, when you phrase it as, you know, forgiveness, it does look like a handout, but it's not. I mean, the income that I make and, you know, on top of the student loans that I currently have, it just would be super helpful for my family in a nutshell.
Jenny, thanks a lot for the call. What do you think, Danielle, about Jenny's story?
I think that's very common, at least in my experience in my reporting, to find a lot of families where parents are still paying down some of their loans while preparing to send their children away to college. And even with a very strategic look of scholarships and working some, it's just an astronomical expense for a lot of people even folks who would consider themselves to be solidly middle class, it is a heavy lift and a heavy burden. I think one of the things that's important to note that in these discussions about student debt forgiveness, at least coming from the Biden camp, there is discussions about how to make college more affordable. And a lot of that includes tuition-free public college, larger investments in schools to allow for them to hold the line of tuition, lower tuition, or make it more affordable for everyone. But primarily targeted towards folks who are making under $125,000.
Thanks again for that call. We heard from Joseph on Twitter who says, please have your guest address the income tax implications of student loan forgiveness and whether Congress plans on forgiving the taxes related to loan forgiveness. That's something I think you tackled in one of your recent pieces.
Yeah, so there's a bit of debate as to how whether or not forgiveness would be taxable. It depends on how it's done, from what I've heard from certain tax policy experts. If it is done as emergency or disaster relief, there is a possibility that that would not be considered a taxable expense in that instance based on our tax code. However, if it is done through Congress, through that $125,000 means tested path that I discussed earlier, then there would be a tax implication there, which is currently the situation for people who are in income-driven repayment plans, which offers forgiveness after 20 or 25 years of on-time payments. Whatever debt is left over that would be forgiven is considered taxable income. So that is something that the incoming administration and members of Congress would have to figure out if they are serious about having that be on the table through any kind of legislation.
In our last minute or so, Danielle, what are you going to be watching for over the couple months between now and the Biden presidency?
There are a couple of things. I mean, certainly the cancellation of debt is a big issue for a lot of people, particularly those who actually have the debt. And then the other thing is that, you know, for the last 9 months or so, there's been a moratorium on student loan payments and also the collection of defaulted debt and wage garnishments and all those sorts of things. That ends on December 31st. The current administration has given no indication that they're going to extend it past that date. And the prospects of having that system turn back on, even if the Biden administration turns it right back off 3 or 4 weeks later, is still really disruptive and confusing for a lot of people who are trying to remain current on their loans, as well as those who are faced with the potential of having their wages garnished. So I'm very much interested in seeing how that plays out with the hopes that it doesn't bring any more harm to families who are already hurting.
Danielle, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Danielle Douglas-Gabriel covers the economics of education for The Washington Post. We talked to her today about the growing pressure on President-elect Biden to forgive at least some federal student loan debt. As Wisconsin's coronavirus crisis deepens, medical professionals and public health departments are playing an ever bigger role. That's been true at school districts, too. School nurses are stepping up to screen students for COVID-19 and help trace possible outbreaks. Madeline Fox reports.
The fall is always one of the busier times to be a school nurse. Lots of kids who haven't been together in months sharing classrooms means a lot of colds and the seasonal flu start spreading around. Then there's logistics, like making sure kids got the vaccines they needed and getting to know new kids with chronic illnesses.
I think the common misconception is that we are just handing out Band-Aids, and that's not the case.
That's Bria Sanders, a nurse for the Whitnall School District.
There's a lot of case management and a lot of supporting students to remain in school that have chronic health conditions.
Sanders is the only nurse in a school district of about 2,400 kids, though a number of health aides also help out. As school district budgets have tightened over the last decade, some Wisconsin school districts have cut their nurses' hours or removed those positions entirely. And the ones remaining have now faced a fall that's busier than most.
Hi, this is Bria Sanders, district nurse for the Whitnall School District. This call is to notify you that your child has been identified as a close contact with a person in our district who has been...
Sanders shared a recording of one of her new tasks. She's helping to contact positive cases in her school district and checking if those kids are quarantining at home. In the 2019-2020 school year, about 300 of the state's 421 school districts had nurses, according to data from the Department of Public Instruction. There were a few more hired by regional school cooperatives to serve several districts. Not all work full-time. Sanders herself only went full-time this year.
Because of the pandemic and the added layer of contact tracing and all the needs that COVID-19 would bring with reopening schools, that was discussed about adding more hours.
Nurses this year have a new role as public health in general is being pushed to the forefront.
Making sure we're a resource for, you know, staff, students, administrators with the most up-to-date, you know, guidance coming out of the CDC, local public health, and state public health. So really being that resource and that clearinghouse for that information.
That's Elizabeth Feisthamel, or Nurse Elizabeth, to the kids at the Sun Prairie School District. Sun Prairie is all virtual, with a few small groups of kids who need extra learning support attending in person. She shares the district with one other nurse, Deborah Brown, who remembers realizing early on that COVID-19 could be bad.
It was already on our radar back in January. We were starting to develop some information that we were pushing out to our staff and to our families by early February.
Feisthamel and Brown are now handling possible cases, consulting their school district on reopening plans, and serving as that information center for parents. But the chronic side of their job, like helping kids with diabetes or epilepsy, hasn't gone away.
We still have to do things like immunization compliance and, you know, connecting with our students with chronic health conditions, making sure teachers are aware of the health needs of their students, even if they're not in person in front of them.
They want teachers to be on top of any conditions that might cause students to miss class. They're just going about it by phone or virtually. School nurses have been adapting according to needs throughout their history. Lauren Glass is the head of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Center for Nursing History.
School nurses have had an extremely important role over time with the young people, with the kids, and help the families access resources that they need, particularly for children with some disabilities.
Glass is a nurse herself and says school nurses' role has always been shifting to keep up with what kids and families require. When she was young, she got her vaccine shots in the school building. Now, nurses have added contact tracing and answering COVID questions. With COVID-19 still spreading unchecked and its long-term impacts unknown, Wisconsin school nurses will continue adapting long past this school year. Madeline Fox, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk to a health and fitness writer about the mindset and the gear needed to get outside this winter. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, this is a big time of year for new and used car purchases, and it's a good time to take a look at the economics of our cars, even if we're sticking with the one we've got. Kate Archer-Kent talks to an auto expert about the market for buying cars and what to think about when getting cars repaired. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, transmission of COVID-19 is less likely outdoors, so getting outdoors is good. But as the temperature drops, it can be more difficult to exercise or socialize outside. Our next guest has been looking into how simple changes in mindset and wardrobe can make a big difference. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you been worried about winter during the pandemic shutting down your outdoor time? What is your plan, if any, to get through it? Have you decided to try a new outdoor hobby this winter? Or have you been an outdoor winter person all along? Maybe you've got some advice to share for everyone else. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. Amanda Loudon is a health and fitness writer. Her recent piece in the Washington Post is How to Embrace Being Outdoors in Winter Rather Than Dreading It. Amanda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Happy to be here.
Before we dive into winter, Amanda, you write about health and fitness. What have you noticed about people's attitudes toward getting outside to the outdoors since the pandemic began?
Well, I think I can speak for many people in that they've noticed a big uptick. I certainly have in the outdoor spaces. I mean, even if it's just around the neighborhood, I frequent a lot of trails in my area in my state park. And, you know, if you're not there by 6 a.m., you're not going to get a parking spot. So, you know, we've seen a big upsurge in outdoor space usage. And I know, you know, as we head into the colder months, a familiar refrain has been, how do we keep this going?
Yeah, I definitely look at the big walks I take around the neighborhood now and think, am I really going to keep doing this when it's 10 degrees and, you know, 5 inches of snow on the ground? It takes some at least planning and maybe a little motivation. How have you, as someone who likes to exercise and likes to be outside, how have you tackled the problem yourself?
I think for me, you know, years ago, I've been at this for many years, being an outdoorist. And I think many years ago, I was able to kind of, you know, unconsciously, I guess, just kind of pick up on the fact that, you know, I was getting a lot of benefits from it. It helped me get through winter. It helped keep my mood elevated. And I think once you get a little taste of that, you keep going. So, you know, maybe a little dose of sunshine, if you can get out there during, you know, the light hours in winter, things like that kind of just help all around with your overall well-being and mental health in the dark, short days of winter.
Well, I think, Amanda, I just gave away where I'm coming from by using the word problem. And maybe that's part of my problem and the problem of people who dread winter. We've got to think of it maybe as an opportunity, or at least a problem-tunity. I don't know. How do we switch that mindset?
I agree with that. I mean, I think that's a big key to this. If you can kind of recognize how maybe it's helped you already during the pandemic, you know, think back to spring when there was, you know, when we were on some pretty strict lockdowns and there wasn't much we could do, and getting outside, you probably noticed that it made you feel good. So, you know, maybe call back to those days and those feelings and help that serve as a motivator to get you out there, because, you know, we're all kind of worried about these next couple of months, right?
Talking to Amanda Loudon, health and fitness writer. She wrote a piece on embracing getting outside in the winter. Even if we come into cold weather with a little bit of dread, you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have advice or need advice on getting outside, enjoying the weather, doing a safe activity during the pandemic? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Amanda, in your piece, you reached out to people in Scandinavia, home to much cold and snow and pretty happy people. What kind of things did you learn from them?
Right. Well, I think one of the big keys in there, you know, was noted by one of the expats that I know who's living over there. And you know, she had never, prior to living there, really spent much time outdoors in the winter. But she noticed everyone around her was getting out and embracing it, and she didn't want to miss out. So, you know, the Norwegians in particular, you know, have this saying that there's no such thing as bad weather, but there is bad clothing. So, you know, I think that is one of the key pieces to all of this, is having, you know, some items that are going to make you more comfortable out there.
You know, I grew up in the Midwest, and I was the kid, like my kids are now, who wouldn't wear the hat and would wear shoes instead of boots. And somehow I'm slowly starting to figure out what to wear in the winter after X number of years. What are the first steps we should be thinking of to, you know, to make sure we have the right outerwear to enjoy the outdoors?
Right. So, well, I think actually you want to start with the innerwear. You know, you want to think along the lines of layering. Because you want to be warm enough when you go out there, but you might heat up if the sun's out. It might surprise you, actually. Or, you know, as you start to exert yourself and warm up, you might want to peel a couple of layers off. But so I think to start with, you want to think about your base layers. Maybe have a nice long-sleeved shirt for your core. Merino wool is a wonderful material because it doesn't get, you know, wet. It keeps you warm. There are nice synthetics as well. Stay away from cotton in the winter. It gets wet and cold quickly, and it'll make you colder as a result. So, you know, those are some good things to keep in mind. Your legs, important also. You want to have some warm tights or leggings of some sort on the bottom. There are fleece-lined ones out there now. Again, there are some wool versions, good synthetics, some nice warm socks to make sure your feet are warm. you know, and then certainly, you know, keep your head covered, keep your hands covered. And there are many, many options to go along with those areas, obviously. And then finally, you know, think about some sort of an outer shell that will protect you, you know, if it's windy or if it's sleeting or snowing, you know, something like that that's going to keep the elements off your body.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Nick is calling from Chicago. Nick, hi.
Hello.
What'd you want to tell us about, Nick?
Well, my wife came back from a trip in winter to Toronto with the catchphrase from them, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing.
Did that inspire you, Nick? Are you able to embrace that philosophy yourself?
Absolutely, and I hope the Chicago restaurants embrace it so we can be sitting outside and getting served in the wintertime like they were up there. They embrace the winter. It's not a time to shut down restaurants, but to keep them open and just be prepared for the weather.
Outdoor dining in the winter. I might try it. Nick, thanks a lot for the call. What do you think, Amanda?
Yeah, I think it's doable. You know, I think a lot of restaurants obviously are going to be trying to put out heat lamps and things like that. And so, you know, that's where you're going to, because you're sitting still, you're going to want to go all out, I think, you know, put on that puffy coat on top of everything else. And, you know, maybe even some, you know, hand warmers, foot warmers that you can throw into some boots or your gloves to make it more comfortable for you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Diane joins us now in Iron County. Diane, hi.
Yeah, I just retired. I worked in a school classroom for 20-some years with no windows.
Oof.
So I'd get home after a 20-minute drive or 30-minute drive home, and I would get outside. I didn't care if it was 10 or 20 below, and it was always dark, and go through the woods, and it was great. And in the winter, you get to cut across lakes, so you can make circles instead of going in and out one way. And I love being outside when it's in the winter.
Diane, thank you so much for sharing that. Diane especially needed it working in that windowless classroom. Amanda, can you talk about some of the benefits of making sure we get outside?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a definite, you know, direct line to mental health and happiness, you know, if you're immersing yourself in green spaces. And so, again, when we're dealing with less sunlight and, you know, some of us tend to get seasonal affective disorder, getting out there is going to give you a lot of benefits. And, you know, this year, many of us are working remotely, not everyone, of course, but for the people who are, and you might have a little more flexibility in your schedule than you otherwise would, you know, if you can switch your exercise time to lunchtime, for instance, and get out there and get that nice feeling of warmth from the sun and you know, see the green that you're surrounded by, things like that, that's going to, well, not necessarily green in the winter, I guess, but nature, you know, that's going to go a long way, I think, to keep you, you know, feeling even keel and happy throughout the winter.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Amanda Loudon, freelance health and fitness writer. She wrote a piece in the Washington Post with the headline, How to Embrace Being Outdoors in Winter Rather Than Dreading It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you tried new ways to get outside during this pandemic? What went well for you? Are you looking forward to getting outside during the winter? Are you worried about it? Do you need some advice or inspiration? And do you have new or old activities that get you outside in all manner of weather? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with health and fitness writer Amanda Loudon about enjoying the outdoors even as the temperature drops. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go back to your calls now. Maureen is with us in Iron County. Maureen, hello.
Hi. I wanted to say that I think it's really important that people realize you have to have gear for these wet days like today where it's chilly but it might be wet. You have to be ready for that and have boots for that that'll take care of that wetness, and boots that are for those really cold days, and just be ready to go with your gear. I have a down snow suit that I've had for a lot of years, And it's so comfortable. I love it. And then you can layer underneath it or on top of it. So, and then making sure to keep those boots in good shape by waxing them or putting the conditioner on them and having everything ready to go. So, yeah, when the weather's 30, you can't wear the same gear as when it's 10 below. But you can get out there when it's 10 below as long as you're ready to go.
Maureen, thanks a lot for calling in. You write about that some, Amanda. Make sure our boots are made for sloshing and that they're waterproof. Even at, 20-something and wet feet, feels pretty darn cold.
Absolutely. That's something you want to avoid. she's right about, having something, if you're going to be out there in wet, snowy, icy conditions, when it's really cold and you're going to be out there for some duration, you definitely want to make sure that you've got something that's going to be a barrier between you and the elements. And again, I'm going to go back to wool, wool socks, work wonders in those situations.
Thanks a lot for that call. Hey, sticking with footwear for a moment, you also write about the importance of traction on icy days. I've got a pretty good method of walking, kind of inspired by penguins, but this year I'm finally taking the plunge to get a little extra something to put traction on my boots. What kind of things do you recommend?
Sure. There are lots of affordable traction devices out there. One of the more popular is the brand Yak Trax. You can find them, practically anywhere. And they're just a simple, rubber shoe-shaped kind of bottom that you just put over your shoe. They've got, either coils or spikes on the bottom. Some people even, old-time runners can tell you about screwing, screws into the bottom of their running shoes. That's, one of the most affordable ways to go about it, a little bit involved, but you could even do that if you have an old pair of running shoes and you feel like sticking those screws in there and using them for traction. But, there are also the off-the-shelf brands that are probably a little bit easier and less labor-intensive.
Let's go back to our callers now. Al is on the line calling from Stevens Point. Al, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Al?
Well, years ago, I got into just being outdoors more in the winter from a mental health standpoint than a physical health. I'm not a fan of winter, but I was inspired by some friends to at least get out and keep active, rather than hibernating. And I eventually got into winter camping, which is a really test of the sort of what your spirit is made of, how much you can handle and I think anything outdoors, obviously year-round is great, but I think winter in particular, it's just really important to stay active and get that fresh air, even if it's 20 minutes,
Al, thanks a lot for that. First, an inspiring story. He went from where I am to camping outside in the winter, but I also love, he can be hardcore, but he says it doesn't have to be an all-night camping trip, Amanda. Just 20 minutes can make a difference.
Absolutely. If you want to just walk out the door again, like I said, at lunch and get a quick little brisk walk around the neighborhood, it'll go a long way.
Thanks a lot for sharing your story, Al, at 800-642-1234. Talking to health and fitness writer Amanda Loudon. She's encouraging us to make time to get outside during the winter, embrace it instead of fearing it. Back to your calls now. Deborah calling now from Madison. Deborah, hi.
Hi. I just want to encourage folks, the first time one gets out on snowshoes or cross-country skis, it might feel awkward. And I know I thought, why am I doing this? I'm just walking on a trail. But boy, once you get the hang of it and glide through powder at midnight in a silent forest, it's stunning. It's really magical. So just stick with it.
Great advice, Deborah. And Amanda, that idea of picking up a new silent sport or outdoor hobby or something like that to really give us something to hang on to and motivate us to get outside.
Absolutely. And, there are so many great options for winter, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing. I think already many retailers are predicting that snowshoes are going to be selling out this year. They're kind of the equivalent to bikes this summer. So if you're thinking along those lines, do that. And snowshoeing has such an easy learning curve. There's really not much to it. And like she said, stick with it, give it a couple of tries and you'll be good to go. Grab your old ice skates out of the attic and go hit the local pond. There are hiking, any kind of outdoor activity. There are a lot to choose from, and a lot that are going to give you that different sense of beauty than what you get in the summertime.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Matt now. Matt's calling from Milwaukee. Matt, hi.
Hey, thanks for taking me. I used to work outside at the airport for many years, and there was, snow emergencies or winter advisories that the news would say don't be outside for more than a certain amount of time. But if you dress appropriately, I used to have battery heated socks, battery heated gloves, now battery heated jackets. All these devices they make nowadays are more affordable, so everybody can actually use them and enjoy them. Also, more importantly, I used to hate winter and the snow, but like everybody else has said, pick a winter sport. You look forward to it. I look forward to being able to go snowboarding, skiing, cross-country skiing. I'm trying to get into snowshoeing this winter if possible. So lots of things to do.
And Matt, you're out there. If you're working on an airport tarmac, it's not just cold and snowy. I imagine you take a lot of wind there too. You were really exposed to the elements, weren't you?
I blinked one time, and my eyeball froze shut for a few seconds. That was pretty scary, but I went back inside to warm up right away.
That, good plan. I like it, Matt. Thank you so much for calling in. Wow. Yeah, he had experience and came out of it loving winter anyway, Amanda. And sounds like he's also embraced a couple of fun winter sports.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good for him. I think, if he can stay warm out there on a tarmac, I think there's hope for everybody else out there exercising.
Yeah. Let's go to, thanks for that call. We'll go to Meg in Viroqua. Meg, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, if nobody else already mentioned it, that using liners in your gloves and in your socks make a world of difference. You're an extra layer and you have a little bit of air between the sock and the liner, and all of a sudden you can keep toasty. And that's also a good place between the liner and the sock to put your hot packs, your heat packs.
Interesting.
Because I moved up from the South to Wisconsin, and it was a drastic change.
I'm glad you found a way to adapt. Thank you so much. So liners in our gloves and socks. I don't think I've ever used one of those, Amanda. Have you?
Here in Maryland, I have to say, where I'm located, I don't need that. But yeah, I'm certainly aware of them. And again, it goes back to the whole idea of layering. And like she said, the extra space in between the layers will create some extra warmth. And then you have the advantage of being able to strip them off if you need to, if you overheat once you're moving.
Thanks for the call, Meg. Time for one more caller. Claudia is with us calling from Madison. Hi, Claudia.
Hello. Well, I moved to Wisconsin in 1976 for grad school up in Stevens Point, and took up cross-country skiing that first winter. I'm still skiing, not near as fast as I used to, but I have an inspiration. There was a film called Green Fire written about Aldo Leopold. Mm-hmm. And in that film, they interviewed one of his daughters who was still alive at the time. She was in her 80s, and she was on the cross-country ski trail. So that's my inspiration.
Fantastic. I love that, Claudia. Amanda, that idea of finding a role model or inspiration could really help us get out and enjoy the winter, even if we're hibernating types.
Absolutely. And there are plenty out there. I just was interviewing, like a 67-year-old snowshoe racer the other day, and she's still at it, still, moving very quickly out there. And look around and see. I'm sure any locality has got different groups that maybe have gathered, maybe not this year in groups, but that have some of those old timers in there that you can look to for inspiration.
Claudia, thanks for the call. And Amanda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Amanda Loudon is a health and fitness writer. We talked about a recent piece in the Washington Post on getting outside and enjoying the winter, even as things get colder. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll get the latest news on the Wisconsin recount and on the mostly failed legal challenges to the election around the country. We'll check out the president-elect's announcement of some key players in his foreign policy and economic teams. Some Wisconsin dairy farmers are calling for milk supply management to keep an oversupply of milk from forcing prices too low for many farmers to stay in business. We'll hear the case for the change and how it could work. Plus, we'll talk to a Republican leader in the state Senate about priorities for the coming year. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Sparkling waters and seltzers have been big business for years now, and weird flavor combos for things like chips and cookies and whatnot have been a big thing. So let's put it together with the release over the last month or so of a pickle-flavored seltzer water. It was part of a promotion involving the TV show Rick and Morty. Turns out it's not the first. A couple of seltzer makers have marketed pickle seltzers over the last couple of years. Who would actually drink a pickle-flavored seltzer? Ideas Network producer Laura Pavin pointed the story out to me. Hey, Laura.
Hey, Rob.
So would you drink a pickle-flavored seltzer water?
I would. I really would.
Yeah. So are you a fan, first of all, of the fizzy water genre in general?
It's the only way I stay hydrated, honestly.
Okay. So that's a good start. And do you like, are you into pickle-flavored stuff, like pickle chips I can get into?
Sure, yeah. There's also pickled popcorn. I think I just like anything with dill. So like dill and on my eggs and dill in my sandwiches. I love the dill.
All right. I'm 100% on board with you so far, Laura, but convince me that I would want my fizzy waters to taste like pickle.
Here's my pitch. Okay. I don't like grapefruit or lime or lemon on their own, but in a seltzer water, for some reason, it just makes sense. Have you had any of those flavors of seltzer waters and liked them?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Those I like. Pickle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll stay skeptical. Laura, thanks. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.